Welcome to Infotech Research Group's monthly threat landscape briefing. We use these briefings to cover current topics related to cybersecurity, such as threat actor campaigns, regulatory compliance and legal issues, and exploitation methods and tactics being used by today's cybercriminals.
For this month's briefing, we start with research specialist Isaac Kinsella regarding threat detection and the evolution of malware. Then we hear from research analyst Logan Rohde about how the Ubiquiti data breach is allegedly much worse than first reported. Finally, we hear from myself, senior research analyst Ian Mulholland, about phishing, highlighting some results from Proofpoint's recently released 2021 State of the Fish report. Without further ado, let's begin.
The evolution of malware. Traditional detection may no longer be adequate. The HP Bromium Threats Insight report from Q4 of 2020 examines the malware trends observed in the use cases of clients who use HP's SureClick Enterprise product. While the research is explicit to HP's product, extrapolation of wider trends can always be pertinent, especially where malware is concerned. Some 88% of the malware that was delivered to the networks was delivered to users' email inboxes after bypassing the relevant gateway filters. In part, the increasing sophistication of malware masquerading as innocuous emails is to blame. On average, it took antivirus products more than 8 days to correctly identify and analyze new malware variants and add them to the appropriate filters. Subsequently, in those 8 days, a great deal of damage can be done to any enterprise. As Alex Holland, senior malware analyst for HP, said, low-cost malware as a service kits are an attractive prospect to cybercriminals, and as we have already continued to see these to proliferate in underground forums. Kits like APO Macroexploit, which emerged in Q4 of 2020, can be bought for as little as $50, illustrating just how low the barrier to entry is for opportunistic cybercrime. Application isolation through virtualization applies least privileged access to risk activities on the endpoints and renders malware harmless by isolating it in micro-virtual machines. Any form of isolation removes the ability for malware to cause any harm on the end device and severely mitigates the potential risks and creates built-in resiliency within the enterprise. How can you best protect yourself given these advancements? Technology, yes, but don't forget your governance. As Holland rightly points out, the bar to entry for cyber attacks is decreasing. Low-level attacks are becoming easier and easier to carry out, while the security concerns for the enterprises continue to grow. For $50, plus the cost of basic computing equipment, an individual can carry out an effective cyber attack on an enterprise. So, how should enterprises look to defend themselves? There are a few approaches that we can look to, the first being technological solutions such as micro-virtualization, and the second being proper governance and understanding of attack vectors. Micro-virtualization works by allowing end users to click on email attachments and download files as they normally would. However, these emails or downloads are contained and rendered harmless if there is something malicious within the attachments. This diffuses most threats that eager clickers may inadvertently bring to an enterprise and leaves attackers with no foothold within the enterprise and no way to persist further. While relying on technological solutions is ideal, it may not be feasible for every organization. In this regard, detection and governance may be the more ideal solution. Understand what the attack vectors are, what the intent behind the attacks are, can help to give a better understanding of what the attacks are trying to achieve. Any foothold on an endpoint or network is a starting point for much more. Lateral movement, defense evasion, privilege escalation are all potential negative outcomes from a foothold into an enterprise. Following through on a foothold created by malware can allow cyber attackers to exfiltrate data, cause reputational damage, or sell their access to other cyber attackers. For more on these attack tactics and techniques, check out my threat preparedness piece to see what types of attacks you're prepared for and which areas you could stand to improve on.
Ubiquiti is in the news after a whistleblower reported that a recent data breach was more serious than the company let on. Back in January, when Ubiquiti first reported the incident to its clientele, it seemed like a garden variety data breach. Data exposed, please reset your password and use two-factor authentication, case closed. However, new details have come to light now that an anonymous incident responder at Ubiquiti has contradicted the initial account of the incident. Between an interview with Brian Krebs of Krebs on Security and a separate correspondence with European regulators, the whistleblower has alleged that the attackers gained admin access to AWS databases as well as root admin access to AWS accounts, application logs, SSO cookie secrets, and user credentials. The whistleblower also noted that several backdoors had to be removed and that the attackers attempted to extort Ubiquiti, offering their silence in exchange for 50 Bitcoin, approximately $3 million. Have incident response and communication plans predefined. The allegations against Ubiquiti are concerning and represent an example of how not to respond to a breach, as trying to hide and conceal the truth is a risky decision, and if you're unsuccessful, it will be very difficult to recover from the brand damage that will undoubtedly befall you. While it is not clear from the information available at what point exactly things went off the rails for Ubiquiti, you can make sure that you don't wind up in a similar position by ensuring that decisions around incident response communications have been made in advance. How many details you share and when comes down to risk tolerance and organizational culture. Nevertheless, it is essential that that standard has been set. For more information on incident response communications, follow the provided link.
Proofpoint's 2021 State of the Fish report has been released. Review the report to keep up to date with the evolution of phishing attacks. Now, phishing attacks come in a variety of forms. Social engineers will leverage email, voice calling, and text messaging to execute time-tested tactics for manipulating others. Proofpoint's report shows that some forms and tactics can be more effective than others. Proofpoint's report also provided benchmarking data across a number of industries. This allows organizations to get a sense of what other similar organizations are experiencing when it comes to this threat. Judging the success of efforts to reduce the risk caused by the phishing threat requires the use of honest metrics. One such metric discussed in Proofpoint's report is the resilience ratio, which can be calculated by dividing the percentage of people who reported the attack by the percentage of people who failed the attack. Some of Proofpoint's recommendations include: better define and communicate the end user role in maintaining the security of the organization, and investigate how security awareness and training can both influence and can be influenced by other security initiatives. Measuring the success of simulated phishing campaigns requires, as I said before, the use of honest metrics. Metrics that seek to tell the whole story, while avoiding and acknowledging when avoidance is impossible, the biases that exist. A common example is the practice of comparing failure rates across separate simulated phishing campaigns. Because the difficulty of phishing tests is hard to estimate, comparing failure rates from campaigns with varying levels of difficulty results in measurements that may tell an inaccurate story. A more specific example is the following. An organization sends out a simulated phishing attack that concerns a mail delivery that has arrived for the user. This campaign sees a failure rate of 15%. To help lower this number, the organization sends out training on how to identify and report phishing emails. The organization then performs another campaign a few months later concerning a tax issue that needs to be resolved. While this email was arguably easier to identify as a phishing email, it was sent during tax season, which resulted in a failure rate for the campaign of 20%. Despite the training that was sent out, the click rate increased. Therefore, comparing these failure rates on their own can lead to the conclusion that the training must not have been effective. When collecting and analyzing metrics, be cognizant of these potential biases. Other parameters to consider include topic relevance, number of employees receiving the email, number of employees on vacation, typical email volume for employees, etc.
This concludes this month's briefing. If you have any questions about what you've heard, want to learn more, or need any support, please do not hesitate to contact us and set up an analyst call. Thank you, and see you next month.